The issue of climate change itself is not black and white. It's a whole area of gray. There's so many areas that are intertwined, interconnected, whether it's politics, social injustice, systemic racism, colonialism. Everything is intertwined in the issue, and unraveling that issue just makes you go down a rabbit hole and learning about all of these things.
Down to you.
Down to us.
It's down to all of us, together. The generations alive today will determine the climate and humanity's future.
This is Down to You Podcast.
The Down to You Podcast team acknowledges that our work spans many unceded territories and treaty areas. We recognize and honor that we are facilitating stories on lands stewarded by Indigenous nations since time immemorial. We are grateful for the traditional knowledge sharers, storytellers, and elders that are with us today, those who have come before us, and the youth that inspire us. Hello, folks, and thanks for being with us today on the Down to You podcast. My name is Hollis.
And I'm Alex. Today, we are talking about education. We spoke with Chloe Nguyen and Tegan Walsh.
A couple of very driven and inspirational youth that are advocating for climate information that's accessible to all of us.
They're kind of creating the space for the conversations to be had in order for people to listen and learn and talk about climate information.
Yeah, you know, information really is a foundation for action. So if we don't know what's happening out there, how are we supposed to take action on it? These young people, they are making sure that we do know what's happening out there.
First up is our chat with Chloe.
Chloe Nguyen, local to the Vancouver area.
And she has a program called Climate Education Reform BC, which is doing work to integrate better climate education into our schools.
Yeah, I'm trying to get some kind of consistency when it comes to what young folks are learning about the climate and how it's changing.
Now let's hear from Chloe.
My name is Chloe Nguyen. I am a grade 12 student living on what is colloquially known as Metro Vancouver, but is on the lands of the traditional Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Coast Salish peoples. I am a first generation settler. My parents came here from Vietnam. So a group of grade 12 students had a capstone project idea to start what you know as Climate Education Reform BC. And I have been organizing with CERBC for about 3 years now. We are a student-led grassroots organization focused on implementing an adequate intersectional climate change education into our current curriculum provincially in BC. And so to do that, we campaign the government, because what we notice a lot of time is that students and young voices don't often get heard or don't often have a place at the table. And so we interviewed and held a lot of what we called wisdom circles with all types of communities, members and key stakeholders, including parents, teachers, professors at universities, other high school students, where we just gathered information and asked them questions like, where do you see our current curriculum lacking in terms of climate education, and what could that look like if there was implemented into our curriculum? And by doing that, we were able to build a list of what we call six needs, each of them outlining a core area that needs to be addressed. For instance, one of them was implementing a climate change and justice curriculum that was intersectional and addressed all facets. That was, I think, our fifth need. But some other ones included making sure that committees were made to overwatch the making of the new curriculum, essentially, and ensuring that this had everyone's voice in it. That is kind of an overview of what we've generally done at the beginning and what we kind of stand for.
It's a whole new area of education in the last maybe 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know the ideas have been around for a while, but for sure when I was going to school, there was no part of our science classes or...
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Because I don't remember if we did either.
Maybe it was mentioned, but just kind of as this is probably happening, maybe a bigger issue even was the ozone hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is not there anymore.
I think they patched that up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we've solved that problem.
Mm-hmm. But the education is a lot more complicated, I guess, for this than maybe just mentioning that pretty straightforward, like, cause and effect problem of the ozone hole.
Yeah, I wonder what's being taught about it now for young people. I mean, it probably depends on where you come from, like what your background is, but that's kind of their whole point, is to get everybody on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a shared understanding
mm-hmm.
of what we're facing.
And in terms of my personal connection with this, what I noticed is that, like, even within the same school, there were massive, like, differences between a class. For instance, like, I had the lucky opportunity to attend what they call as mini school. But a mini school in the Vancouver district essentially is, like, a specialized program within a school that focuses on different areas. For instance, some schools focus on STEM, like science and math. Some focus on humanities, English, philosophy. The one that I joined focused on leadership and environmental stewardship. And so four of my classes were with the same cohort of 27 people. I had four classes with a regular curriculum as well. And so I was able to see like a stark difference. And so I had like social studies. And in my social studies class, one of the core things that we learned at first was like Indigenous relations to the land and climate change and what's happening in those areas. We learned about like the Mi'kmaq, the lobsters, and like all of this like colonialism that is very like what climate change is starkly rooted in is also colonialism and capitalism, right? And so we learned a lot of that. But then when I spoke to my fellow like classmates in the regular curriculum, they spoke about nothing of that. They didn't even have these discussions, which I found very interesting because I think nowadays, one of the biggest things that we need to address is having these discussions with people. So then we know what's coming and how we can deal with it. In our discussions in your classes, we spoke about oil, how that worked and how like the system, the carbon cycle works and how that's affecting like ocean acidification and sea level rising and like the extent of the issue. But we also spoke about how we could reconcile the issues, how we could address these in our own lives. These discussions were never taking place in other classrooms. So if there was this gap within the same school, we imagine that gap to be even larger across school districts, right? And across the province. And so we wanted to address that issue because we thought that it is necessary for students nowadays to grow up with the necessary information, skill sets, and tools and ideas about the future and its possibilities for us to adequately address the issue. Like at this point, we're no longer able to make sure that nothing happens whatsoever as a consequence of climate change, but we are able to ensure that doesn't end up being the worst, right? And so like making sure that it doesn't become so bad that we no longer recognize the world that we know today.
That mini school that she was a part of, it sounded like a really cool mini school specific to environmental stewardship and leadership, which I thought, again, I was like, oh, well, makes sense. You're doing what you're doing. Like, that's so appropriate to where you're at right now.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool program. And then someone like Chloe is the product of that.
Yeah.
They've done a good job.
Yeah, I agree.
We learned that the provincial government is doing some exciting work on addressing the lack of climate change education in BC schools. So we spoke with Natasha Way, a senior policy analyst with the Climate Action Secretariat, Ministry of Environment and Climate Change Strategy. Natasha shared with us some of the work they are doing to enable climate education in BC classrooms.
Hi, my name is Natasha Way. First of all, I just want to kind of acknowledge that what we do in the BC government is sort of one drop in the bucket of climate and environmental education. But every drop really counts. So there's a ton of work being done by youth and nonprofits and teachers in school districts right now to increase climate literacy and environmental literacy in schools. And we're hoping to kind of complement the work that all of those folks are doing. One thing that we hear a lot in our engagement with youth is that they would like to see more climate change in the K-12 public school curriculum in BC. Only 34% of educators across Canada feel that they have sufficient knowledge and skills to teach about climate change. So the Climate Action Secretariat and Ministry of Education have partnered to create a series of resources that are locally relevant so that teachers can teach about climate change in their classrooms, and then they can empower students to learn more about climate solutions and to take action in their own lives. Our next step right now is we're working with a series of teachers from the BC Teachers Federation to create lesson plans that are climate focused and aligned with the curriculum. And then we're working on a climate literacy framework that's more of a broad guidance document that we're hoping to turn into potentially a series of workshops or things that can be presented at a ProD Day event or education conference. We're hoping to have some concrete resources for teachers out within the next year. We're focusing on K-3 to start, but we're also partnering with some external groups that are focusing on creating a guide for K-12 classrooms on environmental education.
If you want to learn more about what the BC government is doing about climate change, you can check out their Clean BC website. And if you want to find resources that you can take to your teachers, reach out to the Ministry of Education or the BC Teachers Association.
So I think one of the key things that's like rooted in like CERBC originally and how it started was that we had hope because we knew about the solutions that were also being made in the world. What we envision was that we equip students with the necessary tools and education to work towards those solutions and to see those solutions as a possibility and not like so far away that they can't reach it and they just feel hopeless. The climate change movement in the past didn't consider like the feeling of like that climate anxiety could have. And oftentimes these discussions only speak about the negatives. Like, of course, climate change is a bad thing, but when we only speak about the bad things, it makes it drastically like depressing, anxiety inducing, like climate anxiety strikes very hard, right? And so I, like, as a child, I was always thinking about, like, oh, the future, what are the possibilities? There's so many things, like, and when I was young, like, I always wanted to become, like, an innovator, someone to make something of value to the world. That's what, I guess, started that within me when I was young, before I even entered the mini school program. But entering that mini school program and getting exposed to these ideas and the education, which is why we think this is so important, just the act of being exposed to these ideas brings the issue to the forefront of your mind and uncovers things that you never really realized until that point, as well as like the possibilities that could be done within that field, because there's so many jobs nowadays within the green field, but people just don't know about them or just don't want to go into them because they've yet to build the interest, because anything is interesting if you learn enough about it. So that's where I began, and that's why I continue to today, because I want to see that future possible for everyone and the future generations that come after us.
There's got to be some element of like understanding the problem and kind of doing the work to teach kids about what the problem is, how bad it is, what it's coming from. But like Chloe says, another aspect of it has to be the solutions and the engineering and like the what we can do about it side of things.
The hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does really focus on that. When we talk to her, she really highlights that that's in the roots of their organization, is to be solution-based and solution-forward. And as we know from talking to other youth, climate anxiety is definitely prevalent and something to be aware of. And when it comes to finding solutions or moving the dial on climate crisis, we do need to be empowered and feel supported in order to navigate and engage with that problem.
I think in colonialism, there's a separation of the land and the person, the property and the land. We own this land. We are a separate being from this land. And I think that's one of the main things that had led us to a point where we are so disconnected and not seeing the impact that the world is feeling on like a fundamental level, with the wildfires occurring, the ocean levels rising. It's so rooted in colonialism. And so when we're able to step out of that, step out of like the city and like go into nature, go camping for a few days, don't have connection to internet type of thing, we really are just a part of the land. We live off the land and we need the land to survive. The land nurtures our community. It nurtures human beings. It has helped us for millions of years. And so we need to take care of the land the way that it's taken care of us. So I think you're unable to recognize that until you're off concrete. So that portion of like connecting to nature is really important. And it's actually one of the things we've spoken about a lot when like talking to politicians and talking to professors and seeing where they're at, is that a lot of the times what we see is one thing coming back is connecting to nature, making sure that people know that they are a part of the land and not separate from the land. That's really important to us. And I think we first have to recognize the impact colonialism has had on our view of the world and climate change and leading us to the extent of where we are right now, where we're no longer able to reach that 1.5 degree of warming that we had set back, like in the Paris Climate Agreement so many years ago. I think the thing that keeps us going and keeping us in the work that we do, especially considering that we're working with like politicians and campaigning them, which is sometimes disheartening, especially since there's a lot of like slow moving pieces. I'm not going to like sugarcoat it. We often do feel like not even having an impact, unfortunately, because there's a degree of patronization due to our age, as well as like just the nature of government. So we don't see the impact that we have until a few years later. But what keeps us like hopeful is that when we speak to other people, when we go to conferences, when we sit on panels or we're watching panels, we see the work that the community is doing. It's nice to see that other people are passionate about an issue like this too. And often when we speak to other people, they're like, oh, you inspire us. No, really, they inspire us, because we're not going forward just for our own selfish reasons, but we're going forward to help everyone, right? But for me personally, one of the things that really keeps me in this area, especially since a lot of the times it's very difficult to keep going in activism because there's so much pushing back at us. So what keeps me going a lot of the times is seeing that, A, like there's solutions out there that we're working towards. For instance, the other day I was watching a video that was like showing how a bunch of these scientists like got together and started gene editing trees to absorb more carbon. And I found that amazing. Like, now if we could teach that in schools and like show the possibilities, that could inspire a new generation of scientists. But CERBC didn't only just focus on that STEM part. It was focusing on our entire educational system and the intersectionality and how everything interacts with one another and is not isolated. So another thing was like learning about like all these politicians, for instance, like AOC, and how she was sitting in Congress and like talking to like oil companies and like just breaking down their argument and showing that it makes absolutely no sense. Watching other people who are working towards the solutions really keeps me inspired, and seeing that maybe right now the work that we're doing doesn't have immediate impact, but we don't know what they could have in the future, right? It's enough for me to see that people who had worked on things in the past have been starting to get to their destination today. It really inspires me to see that like there's a possibility of what we're doing right now can have that impact as well.
Touching on the differences of how youth are being educated and where their heads are at with all of this, I'm really impressed too by kind of their awareness of colonial issues too. Mm-hmm. And many of the youth that we've talked to have brought that up, realizing that that's where a lot of these problems stem from and are a main issue at the core of this whole problem.
Yeah.
I don't know, it seems a lot more conscious than maybe when we were growing up. What do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. Like colonization. Now I'm trying to think like when's the first time I really like related that to the context of my own society, like mm-hmm. how I live. Like maybe I have heard about colonial powers like from Europe and colonizing the world. But now I understand it as like the context of my life, like how I'm living and how I came to be here.
It's like almost a whole sort of psychology and like mm-hmm. way of being that has permeated our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That dictates how we exist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like wrapped up with capitalism as well, of course. And then consumption as well is wrapped up with capitalism. And then that's kind of this infinite growth idea that is unsustainable. And I think a contributor to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's definitely a connection to all of those things.
I could see the impact in my own life, like just me being that curriculum and being exposed to those ideas, like the privilege that I had permeated throughout my entire life. I have brought home a lot of the ideas of environmentalism and what we need to do. I have been able to influence my mom a lot in the decisions she makes in her everyday lives. And that made me so proud that my mom had made that decision and that I was able to, I guess, like have a hand in that. Because those little changes make a big difference. And we also have to recognize that our changes do matter, but to an extent, the top 100 companies drive 70% of the emissions. What we need to start looking at now is talking to politicians to address those big companies, as well as changing our individual actions, because that is also necessary, but it's a fine balance. Like, if enough of us change our actions, the politicians will notice and they want our vote. They want to be in office as long as possible. So when we change our actions and then we also voice it to them, they are able to start possibly making those steps towards change. And we can't share these thoughts if we never are exposed to the thoughts and ideas and discussions about these ideas, essentially.
That idea of like politicians listening to us when we become like vocal enough about the change we want just kind of struck a chord with me.
Yeah. It's always helpful kind of, I think, to look back on where we were and how far we have come, because I tend to be the kind of person that thinks change isn't happening fast enough. But because I get so stuck in where we are and I forget to think of the context of where we've come from, but change might be happening faster than it seems sometimes.
And then with education like this, with kind of bringing up the youth with more awareness of all the issues and a kind of stronger stance towards all of it, it's bound to just change more quickly, more...
Yeah, more across the board or something. Like, I know.
But it seems like maybe there's going to be a bit of a tidal shift with that attitude.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
When it comes to like certain big topics like climate change. Yeah.
To address climate change, essentially, we need to ensure that we are community and we're caring for each other, because we need to not only live for ourselves, but we need to live for the future and the people who come after us. We're able to be here because of the people in the past, but at the same time, those people were unable to take care of the land. And so now it's placed upon us, unfortunately, to deal with that and hopefully make it bearable for future generations to live on this earth as well.
I think the worst place to be with sitting with that anxiety is to be not doing anything and not around people who are doing anything. That's where it really can foster and just not be helpful or motivating. But I think today I'm still anxious about it, but it's come to a place where I can still be joyful and live with the knowledge of what's happening to our planet, but also recognize my part in providing action to improve that outcome. And that's really helped my climate anxiety, is just doing something. Doing something and being around other people who are doing something, I think, is the key thing.
That was Tegan Walsh, coming to us from Qualicum Beach on Vancouver Island.
And she got involved with the climate fight after her experience during the BC heat dome of 2021, a real wake-up call in the climate crisis.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to be talking about that heat dome for a while, anticipating any future to come. Hopefully not, but potentially.
But one good thing that came out of it was Tegan's drive to make some change.
Mm-hmm, yeah, let's listen.
Yeah, so I'm Tegan. I'm 16 years old, and I live in Qualicum Beach, BC, on Vancouver Island. I got involved in climate action just a couple years ago, actually. It was September 3rd, 2021, and I joined like the Global Fridays for Future strike. I think I joined that because, I mean, that was after the heat dome that had hit BC, and it was just kind of a lot of things adding up that I was feeling a little bit anxious about what was happening to our planet, and I really wanted something concrete that I could do where I could just contribute what I could to the movement. So I think that's why I started, and I've continued to this day because I think that is where I find inspiration, is with the conversations that we have at the strike, because we do it at our local town hall, and so we have a pretty small community, so we have an opportunity to have like a lot of conversations with all generations, like with young kids and with retired people. And I've just found that really inspiring for me and encouraging. Even if we don't always see eye to eye with everybody that we talk to, we've found a place where we can kind of have a conversation anyway and find some common ground and work from there to still have dialogue. And I just really started to recognize the value of that. So I think that's the main thing for me.
I don't know if you remember the heat dome that year in BC. Just to kind of touch on what Tegan's saying, she lives in Qualicum, which has one of the oldest populations. So the heat dome was probably very scary for that community. When speaking to her, that sounded like the catalyst, that experience of like, wow, things are getting worse.
I remember being in the interior during that heat dome and it was 47 degrees. It's insane. Man. But then I also remember hearing that on certain beaches and on certain coastlines, because waters were too warm, that directly after that heat dome, it would just smell like rotting fish.
Sea life.
And rotting sea life. And I wonder if she got to experience that at Qualicum Beach, if that might have had an impact as well.
Yeah.
I live in a community with one of the oldest populations in Canada. And one of the key parts, I think, to this that I really want to try to evolve into more action is bridging generations and forging connections between older generations. Because, of course, the youth are the future, but we need people in power right now to also be doing things. So, yeah. So we've worked with our town, the town of Qualicum Beach, to try to push for an updated sustainability plan, because unfortunately the sustainability plan in our town was created quite a while ago. And we have had targets like climate emission reduction targets for 2020 and 2030 and 2050. But unfortunately there hasn't been follow up to see if we are meeting our targets. So that's been a big focus for our presentations to council, asking them to start reporting on emissions as a first step. We've also worked with our MP, our Member of Parliament, on just more of a federal level to try to get more youth representation in government. So that's come across as a petition that we've worked on. So we went door knocking, collecting signatures for a petition to get required youth consultation by MPs before they vote on a climate-related bill. It'd be better if we could have youth voting, but we thought that this is something that maybe could actually happen, something that is achievable and within reach. But I think it could also be really impactful if we could have a youth voice just talking to MPs more. So that's the goal of that petition. My biggest learning in that area would be probably that it takes a lot longer than I'd like to get some initiatives across. And even though it seems like sometimes you're just saying the same thing over and over again and nothing's actually happening, there are people within these systems, people within government who want to work with you to actually get things done. And so that's one thing that I think I learned from working with my MP. We hosted like a youth forum with him and it just kind of made me realize there are people who actually want to help us create these actions, even though it might not happen overnight. And that MP, he did campaign on a federal level for banning certain single-use plastics a while back, and that ended up making it into Canada's climate plan. That story also helped me realize that it is possible to get these things done. It's just you have to stick to it and keep hope.
Tegan emphasizes conversing with people who are maybe not in your bubble.
Yeah.
Which sometimes maybe those strikes, everyone's kind of on the same page. They want the same thing and kind of have the same
goals
and background and stuff.
That makes sense.
I like how she sees the value in talking to the other side constructively. Yeah.
Yeah, she's worked with the MP in her community. She has presented to council. She wants to hold bureaucracy accountable. I think that's super important.
Yeah, there's so many things I've learned. I feel really grateful to have learned so much from this movement over the past few years. I think definitely the biggest thing would be learning about my community and the level of awareness in our community, and just about how, I mean, we haven't always had a positive response. Sometimes people come up and are angry or they're afraid. So I think a really big learning experience for me has just been learning how to have conversations with those people, being okay with if somebody comes up and says, oh, climate change isn't real. That's like a pretty extreme view. But like if they say something like that, then my instinct is to say that's not true. There's consensus of scientists. But then what I've learned from that experience is kind of that it just goes back and forth and it's not really helpful dialogue. So I think the biggest thing for me has been just learning how to listen and then almost like plant some seeds of things that might grow into a better understanding of this issue for those people, but also ending the conversation in a way where the people don't feel more angry than they did before. A connection is formed or something that could turn into something else. Yeah, so that was hard for me to understand at the beginning, but I've been grateful to learn that over time.
Yeah, conversing with people in a healthy way.
Yeah.
What do you think about this next generation being way more open and less individualized, less closed off ideas-wise, less like one team or another sort of point of view? Do you think that holds? Like just hearing all these kids talking about talking to people of opposing views, of older generations and stuff. What do you think?
Hard to say, but definitely Tegan seems wise beyond her years when she talks about that. Yeah, just how she reflects on not wanting to argue with someone with an opposing view, but instead like leaving the conversation on a positive note. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, you're 16 and you figured that out? Like, props. Like, how? Teach me how and teach the rest of us how.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like a novel thing. Yeah, and a mature thing. But I also wonder if it's like a bit of a generational thing with these youth who are growing up with like more sharing sort of ideas and less like ownership, less, I don't know, kind of more traditional Western ways of looking at things. I wonder if that is part of it. But
breaking out of the old kind of paradigm of being. It's possible.
But anyway, she definitely represents that. And I think that idea of conversing with people of different views and education that way, of kind of sharing ideas across maybe these sort of mental borders, is as important as anything to this climate change issue.
It's really important for people to understand at least the basics about climate change, and also how to interpret the material that we get from scientists, like graphs and just basic things like that. I found that in our conversations at town hall, sometimes the base of misunderstanding can just be a misunderstanding about the basic facts. So I think it's definitely really important. One book that I've really learned a lot from was The New Climate War by Michael E. Mann. He's a climate scientist who works at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's really good at communicating to the average person in language that we can understand. Also, just like talking to, there's a lot of people who are actually very available to ask questions to, like scientists and researchers, because sometimes you can't always find the thing that you're looking for in just reading material. So like reaching out to these people and asking to have conversations can be really helpful. Also, the golden standard for climate science is considered to be the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They have all their reports available publicly. And then in terms of the action part, I mean, like the Town of Qualcomm Beach Sustainability Plan is available publicly as a document to research. And so that's been helpful to read the history of climate action in my town before I was involved, and learning about what we have done, what targets we have set and that sort of thing. Yeah. There's definitely a role for educational institutions and climate education for young people specifically. I see an improvement in the curriculum. I think in the past few years, we've added some climate aspects, but I think that that could be extended further to include different subjects, not just science. Climate change really can influence all of the subjects like social studies, even math. And there are programs in our school like outdoor education programs. Some of the teachers who have really supported us with Fridays for Future are involved in that. And I think there are opportunities in something like that to learn about, learn through nature about climate change and related problems. I think the other thing that would be really helpful in curriculum is a flexibility for students who are interested in this sort of thing. If they already have that spark of interest and inspiration, to encourage it by providing things like independent studies and flexibility for them to go ahead and learn about that and then share it with their classmates. That's something that I have struggled with a little bit, to find balancing school and climate activism. So it would be helpful if there would be more support around incorporating them, because it is relevant to a lot of the subjects that we're studying. So yeah.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to touch on, how important it is to like relay scientific ideas to the general public in a way that they're clear and understood and not kind of vague and over people's heads. And that's a tricky thing, I think. And a big reason why some of these like disagreements arise in the first place is because the science communication isn't super clear all the time.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think that it's actually kind of hard to communicate big ideas simply. I think adequate communication is huge and not easy. You can be really intelligent and understand the science behind it, but like it's a whole nother thing to transmute that or put that into more digestible terms for people that don't necessarily have that science background.
That skill is so important, especially in this field where the science is a big part of the
background.
Or
the understanding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, education and communication seem to go hand in hand a little bit. Like education and good communication, let's say, like appropriate, clear, understandable communication. Also, communication comes with like sharing, like expressing ideas, but also like listening back, maybe. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's always a two-way street. Mm-hmm. Listening is just as important as speaking.
Yeah, sharing. Speaking. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Big part of kind of being able to get on the same page is just listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I've learned a lot about is how much youth actually care about this. Because I, at the beginning, I felt pretty alone. I felt I couldn't see a lot of other people and a lot of other youth in my community doing things about this. And so I kind of felt like I was the only one who cared about it. But as I got involved more and started talking to kids at my school about it, and we also did a survey of 200 youth in our school to see what they thought about climate change. And I learned that people care about it a lot. Almost a quarter of youth said that thoughts and feelings about climate change affected their daily lives in our school. And so it's obviously very sad, but it's also inspiring that they want to do something about it and that there's so many people who actually care. We can get through this.
What we need to recognize is that climate change is a big issue, but it's also an issue that we need to consider on all ends and how that affects people disproportionately and make the policies to reflect that. Especially as well in like our education system and in the discussions we're having, because yes, sure, it's just the students getting exposed to ideas, but these students will bring these discussions home to their parents, will bring these discussions home to their grandparents even, and bring these ideas to the table when they're discussing things like oil and politics. And because everything is intertwined, like we had mentioned, but when you are able to expose a younger generation, they bring it back to their household, and their household can be multiple generations, right? And so it's just a matter of exposing everyone to ideas and how our world really is and where we need to go from now.
It's cool to hear about these youth providing the space for these conversations.
Yeah, they're cultivating such great skills at such a young age. It's impressive, and I'm interested to see where they take everything.
Definitely. So, SIRBC is focused on high school education specifically, or implementing climate science, climate engineering,
climate knowledge,
climate politics. I don't know, I guess it kind of runs the gamut of the subjects.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like maybe Tegan is approaching it on a more like talking in person to her MP, making changes in her home community. Yeah, kind of that sort of smaller scale, but just as important scale.
Mm-hmm.
And Chloe is looking at kind of systemic change to our education system.
Mm-hmm.
But they both are speaking about the same things in the end.
Knowledge sharing,
knowledge communication.
Yeah, exposure.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say that Tegan also talks about, another one of our themes that we love to discuss, is the climate anxiety. And she talks about transmuting that anxiety into action and how that helps her feel better. It's so easy to think there's like, when you're anxious, there's like, you got to fix something. And it's like, no, it's actually a super normal response. Like,
yeah,
everything's working as it should be in your system. And it sucks that you feel that way because it's hard to go through your day like that. But it's a sign that you're on the ball.
Yeah. And aware and concerned and a citizen of the world, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is too bad that that is a normal thing. And that it's a common thing now, but it's like
reality.
Thing.
Yeah. It's like every young person we talk to, it comes up all the time. So, but I mean, I don't know, on the flip side of that, it's like a lot of these youth and young people are transmuting their anxiety into action. And so maybe that's like, as terrible as anxiety is, it's like, maybe that's actually like the golden ticket to like moving the dial on climate change.
Yeah.
Because it spurs you into action. Another thing, just to bring it back to Chloe for a minute, that she talks about is intergenerational learning.
Yeah.
Which she talks about the fact that the climate education in schools is not just about the school experience and the kid, but it's also about the youth going home and then sharing that information with their grandparents or their parents and like having those discussions cross-generationally. That's just a piece of it as well, is it's not just about the youth learning, but it's about also providing them the knowledge to teach the older generations and otherwise.
And this has come up to kind of one generation learning from the other. It's definitely like a give and take.
Yeah.
The older generation has a lot to learn from the youth, and the youth has a lot to learn from the experience of the older generation, as always. One thing she mentions is that a way to not get discouraged is by seeing other people doing things.
Mm.
When you're seeing that people are out working on these solutions, not just us, but people outside of us are working hard to come up with solutions, caring about it, talking about it, making changes in their lives and in their communities. It's kind of inspiring to do the same in our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it plants those seeds of hope and change and possibility, and it can spread. It has that ripple effect, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all have something to learn from each other, and I think that's a great kind of attitude to take on moving forward.
Totally. Yeah, education can come in all sorts of forms, I guess.
Indeed.
To put it short.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's all we have for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in as we discuss climate education. We appreciate your ears and your listening, and we hope you enjoyed hearing as much as we did. Join us next week, where we dig into technology and AI and the potential that it has to address our climate crisis.
On this journey through BC, we've met some incredible youth with some amazing stories about things they're doing. It's been really inspiring seeing this generation take initiative on ecological and environmental issues. The Down to You podcast wouldn't be possible without our wonderful production team and funders. From the Fraser Basin Council Youth Program, we have Sonia Dodig, Hollis Nelson, Nicole Gonzalez-Filos, and Lindsay Sackett. Also, a big thanks to our collaborators, Vedluna Studio, Pendimental Sound Production, ZG Stories, and Maya Lazar Mulabdich for her beautiful illustrations. This project was undertaken with the financial support of the Government of Canada through the Federal Department of Environment and Climate Change. Thank you, everyone, for listening.